It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Gene Purcell. Coming up later on in the hour, we'll hear from a Wisconsin school superintendent about referenda on the ballot tomorrow that would support the idea of additional tax dollars to support school operations. First, though, much has been said about how a lack of parental involvement can't affect children. But what if parents are too involved? What if they're too attuned to their kids?
Author Hannah Rosen recently wrote a piece on overprotected kids in the Atlantic that caught her eye. She took a close look at children's playgrounds and found that fears over safety makes many American playgrounds boring to kids and, in a sense, robs them of an opportunity to explore their creativity, their independence, and sense of adventure. Hannah Rosen joins us now to share more about the importance of allowing children to face challenging situations. Hannah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
A lot of parents today, including yourself, remember vastly different childhood experiences than their own children have. I, for instance, remember raiding this plastic factory and getting gobs of hardened plastic and trying to melt it down and running through strangers' garages, being out until dark. How different is that childhood culture is it today from what it used to be when parents today were growing up?
Well, your memories are very similar to mine, and that's in fact why I wrote this story, because I remembered my own childhood so differently from the way my kids are being raised that I actually thought I might be making it up. You know, was it true that I spent all those hours by myself and that my mother wasn't always watching me or that I was running around the neighborhood? There were no such things as play dates. And, you know, I think a lot of people my age who are raising children now have that feeling. They sort of understand their childhoods were different, but they don't know exactly why or how that happened.
Well, one thing that happened is it seemed like the parenting culture and culture at large began to get more fearful. There began to be more anxiety about accidents and stranger danger. When did that start to take root?
It started in about the late 70s or the early 80s, and that's one thing I do in this article is track which cases and how it came to be and how stranger danger got to infect our minds. I mean, the irony, as I write, is that there actually isn't a much greater chance of a child being abducted now than there was in the 70s, and yet we feel that there must be. We feel very afraid, even though there isn't actually any statistical reason to feel more afraid now than when we were children.
So you're saying that the world is not more dangerous now than it was when we were kids?
No, much less so. I mean, we've been going through a real crime decline, especially lately. I think the world is very different than when we were kids, but it's not more dangerous. It's different in the sense that neighborhoods don't have the cohesion that they used to. There aren't, for example, a lot of mothers around in the neighborhood. A lot more mothers work. And there isn't a sense that neighborhoods are knitted together and that if you're not directly watching your child, somebody else in the neighborhood would be. So things have changed. They just haven't changed in exactly the way we think they have.
So what happened? There were just a bunch of high-profile cases that were maybe horrific but not very common, and everyone just kind of freaked out?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's basically what happened, is that there were a lot of cases, like the ones that I write about. They got a lot more media attention than they used to. And as I said, we had this vague sense that something had changed. You know, in the 70s was the era of the divorce boom. You know, we had a sense that families were coming apart, that neighborhoods were coming apart. And so what we did is kind of, that's a hard thing to get your head around. That's a very big and vague fear. So what we did is kind of localize it onto something manageable, which was stranger danger. You know, if you let your kid walk down the street, somebody's going to snatch them, which is a horrible thing that you can't get out of your head, you know, once it's happened to someone you know or you see it in the news, but it's really, really, really unlikely.
So part of it is that, the fear of abduction, but part of it is, you know, the playgrounds themselves changed almost overnight, it seems like, from these places that were a little bit edgy and where a kid could kind of challenge themselves a bit to everything being standardized and plastic coated and rubberized. What about that?
Yeah, so I write about a lawsuit that happened in the late 70s where a kid fell off a slide. And again, this was the era when we were kind of primed to be nervous. And so that got a lot of publicity, and states became nervous about being sued. There came to be regulations that were passed to govern how playgrounds should be built. And I think what happened over time is the culture became afraid of letting their children take any risks. In other words, you know, we just felt that it was our job as parents always to be protecting our child, that that was the prime purpose of a parent. And I think what happened as a result of that, without our intending it to, is that we prevent our children from taking any risks. You know, we think that, you know, any emotional or physical risks are too much for them to bear.
And for this piece, you sort of tracked a new movement that seems to be getting some traction, at least in Britain, maybe in the U.S. as well. But you went to a playground in the U.K. where the kids basically had free range. They started fires, they played in a creek, they swung on ropes. Can you tell us about that playground and the philosophy behind it?
Yes, it's called an adventure playground, or some people call them junk playgrounds, and they're actually modeled after junkyards. They were quite common in the 40s after the war, and then they were kind of in keeping with the cultural norms of the time. That is, you know, you wanted your kids to grow up to be brave and take risks. And they really look like a junkyard. I mean, you've got tools all around and the kids build fires. That's the thing that catches most people's attention. I mean, they're literally taught how to build fires. And there aren't any parents around. That's the other interesting thing. The kids come and go on their own. What there are people called play workers who are, you know, adults who are kind of lightly supervising what's going on without really intervening. And I went there just as a kind of shock therapy. You know, I start my story that way, just as a way of showing people there is a whole other way for children to be. And they believe very much that, you know, children should be able to take these risks, because in taking these risks, they learn to conquer them. And that's what growing up means. You know, that's how you slowly come to trust yourself, know your own limits. The kids kind of travel in packs there the way we used to. And so that's the way you learn to kind of negotiate with other children and find your place in the pack. And so all the things that, you know, used to be natural markers of growing up, which don't actually happen anymore just because child culture is so extinct now.
And one theory is that by testing yourself, or maybe even falling off a piece of equipment and bonking your head, you get sort of inoculated against something that might grow into an anxiety later on.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, this is where you're taking a leap here, but there is all the talk one hears about the millennials. You know, they're not independent enough. Their studies show that creativity and the ability to think outside the box has gone down over the last 10, 15 years. And so one theory is maybe they haven't been allowed to take the risks that are necessary in order to grow and know yourself and trust yourself. And so one researcher I quote, you know, her study is about how when a child needs to feel like they're taking a risk and conquering it, that isn't to say that they need to do something dangerous, but they need to feel that they're doing something dangerous. Like, oh, I'm going to try and climb a little higher than I thought I was capable of, and then I'll master that, and then I'll feel really proud of myself, and sort of on and on through the stages. So it used to be, you know, you would wait for your mother to give you permission to ride your bicycle to your friend's house, or, you know, to ride your bicycle across the street to your friend's house, and there would be little markers for a third grader, a fifth grader, a seventh grader, and they would be signs that you were growing up and could trust yourself. She even writes, this researcher, about getting lost and how important that is for children, that thrill of kind of, oh my gosh, I'm out of sight of my parents, you know, what am I going to do? How am I going to save this situation? So again, not actually being in dangerous situations, but feeling inside them that they are solving problems for themselves.
We're talking right now with Hannah Rosen, national correspondent for The Atlantic and the author of the book The End of Men. We'll continue our conversation about the virtues of a wild childhood. We're talking with Hannah Rosen, national correspondent for The Atlantic, talking about how overprotecting kids might affect their development and their creativity and their ability to believe in themselves and overcome things.
And we'd like to hear from you, too. What was your childhood like? Did you have a great time as a child exploring out of the eyesight of your parents, nearly not knowing what was going on? But then, as a parent yourself, how do you feel about that? How do you protect your kids and yet not hurt their development and creativity? What kind of line do you have to walk there? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us, talk@WPR.org.
Do you think there would be a benefit to letting your children have a wild childhood, maybe more like your own? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. And we were talking about the playgrounds, and you visited, Hannah, some adventure playgrounds in the U.K., and there was later on in America a book of guidelines for playground safety, and it sort of turned the tide on what playgrounds looked like. What kinds of playgrounds did the guidelines bring about? What did they turn into here?
At first, the guidelines were fairly general in the 1980s. They had kind of common sense suggestions. You know, don't make holes in bars that a kid's head can get stuck in. You know, just kind of general guidelines like that. And over time, like many other things, they became very, very specific and designed more for manufacturers and without kind of children's play and adventure in mind. So, it, you know, they were designed in order to make it easy to be able to have interchangeable playground parts here, Sweden, you know, Wisconsin, Seattle, sort of wherever you go, you could see the same kind of playground, and it could be interchangeable, and also designed to prevent lawsuits. So nobody wanted nobody wanted to be sued and have those instructions read, even though they're not mandatory, they're suggestions. Nobody wanted any parent to bring those suggestions into a courtroom and say, look, they're not following the guidelines. And so it all became about not being sued and easily manufactured.
Now, it's one thing to talk about missing a wild childhood like you and me might have had, but there are some researchers who say that, for instance, kids today are not as creative on lots of different measures as they used to be back when playgrounds were more adventurous. Can you talk about some of that research?
Yes, I just think we've taken it a little bit too far, that kids are less. There is something called a creativity scale where they measure, you know, sort of original thoughts. They give a series of questions. They've been doing it for a very long time. And in the last 10 years, kids have shown to be lower on the creativity scale. There's also evidence of depression. You know, a lot of, we read a lot about millennials coming in, or it's pretty young millennials, I would say, post-college kind of drift, not really knowing how to take care of themselves and not expecting bad things to happen. I mean, it's not so much that they're crippled as that when things are drifty or not set or they have to rely on themselves, they feel a little at sea. You know, so and as we all know, that's just a part of life, that will happen in life, that you will feel at sea. So you have to expect that to happen. And that's something you learn to depend on yourself early in childhood. And I don't think the answer, by the way, is to go back to the 70s. I'm not advocating that we let our children run free. I think it's nice that we have close connections with our children. I think it's more about giving a little breathing space and maybe reconceiving the role of a parent so that you're not always saying, my number one job as a parent is to protect my child from the possibility of emotional and physical harm. What you're more saying to yourself is, maybe one of my jobs as a parent is to create opportunities for my child to explore and get to know themselves. So that kind of becomes part of the job description of the parent.
And let's go to our phone lines now. We have Don joining us from Ontario. Hi, Don.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to agree with your guest. I mean, I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and things were pretty wide open for kids. I mean, we'd be sometimes on our bikes, for instance, for, you know, like 8 in the morning till 10 at night or something. But I had to disagree a little about the world being more dangerous or not. I was talking to your screener a minute ago about I grew up in Trenton, New Jersey, for instance, and Trenton always had parts that were bad, but not that many. And now I think it would be pretty dangerous to walk around like much of that city. And I think there's a lot of places that have made that same evolution, and it's not a good one.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Don. And what about his take that maybe things are changing for the worse and we do need to be more watchful?
Well, the one good piece of news here is that things are changing for the worse in society, meaning?
Don has dropped off, but I'm assuming he means, you know, in essence, there maybe is more crime and more things to be wary of.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't. I don't know what to say. I mean, crime has gone through a nosedive in the 90s, crimes against children, crimes against everyone. And the kinds of crimes that parents have in mind, like a stranger abducting your child, they just haven't gone up. I don't know what to say. I mean, you can measure these things. There are FBI crime statistics. There are people who watch these things. They're extremely rare. What has gone up is divorce and therefore fathers snatching their children. I mean, I write this in the story, like, if you really want to keep your child from getting abducted, you should say, don't talk to your father, not don't talk to a stranger, because what has gotten more likely is that in a divorce case, a father who wants to but cannot see his children because of some court proceeding, takes a child, and that's what happens. It's generally somebody the child knows, not a stranger.
All right. Well, thank you, Don, for the call. Next to Katie in Bayfield. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I was just calling to kind of throw another perspective in. I'm, I guess, on the later end of the millennials. I just turned 29 yesterday, and I was raised way up north, Bayfield, Wisconsin, with a lot more freedom. Like, I thought, like, I was pretty wild and free, typical story of the 8 a.m. out, not home till dark, And I know a lot of, like, that was how all of my siblings and cousins and friends, we were all raised in that same way, thinking we were really wild and free, but realizing now as an adult, it was our community's responsibility to keep us safe. Really tight-knit community, and I'm realizing as I'm raising my kids now that though they do tend to go out and they get to spend a lot of time out and about, they still, we rely upon ourselves, upon, you know, my kids' aunties, or we know where the kids are, wherever they're at. My son's only about 8 years old, but I can trust him to do what he needs to do.
So you said you relied on your community growing up. Can you describe your community? What was that like?
Well, I was born and raised on a reservation. And so, I mean, my next door neighbor was my best friend, but also my cousin, and her dad was my dad's cousin. I mean, we were all super close. We lived in a small little housing area, but, you know, as long as we were in that housing area, we knew our boundaries, where we were supposed to go, when we were supposed to be back. And as you got older, you were allowed to go a little further, go farther out, go, you know, okay, you can go to the next housing area, or you can go farther a mile down and go to the store and back, or we have woods, I mean, in conjunct to every almost house I've ever lived in, and wandered around playing where we could when we could.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Katie. Thanks for telling us about that. And it sounds like what you're saying, hon, is that the one thing that's changed is maybe communities aren't as tightly knit, and maybe you don't have all the eyes in the community feeling, watching your kid instead of just you being responsible. But what do you think when you hear Katie?
Yeah, I think that is true. That is the big change, is that, you know, moms particularly are not around. But what happens is then we exaggerate the problem and make it worse. Like, over time, as that started to happen, we've then fully conceived of the public space as very dangerous. And so we make it worse, you know, because we sort of give momentum to this idea of there being no knitting in a community. Like, I honestly think, you know, if your child learned to say hello to the neighbors, that would be better. You know, make an effort, in other words, for your child to get to know, to have a sense of a public space as safe, at least your community and the people around you and the people they know, that we started to think of that as a kind of valid space for your child, as opposed to the only safe places in their own bedroom.
Honey, you talked about how you think maybe the takeaway from this is that not that parents should let their kids just be free range and have run of the place, but to create opportunities for them to experience some of these risk-taking moments. How would you go about doing that?
Well, I mean, there's very simple things like leave your child alone on the playground. I mean, then you see this routinely as children, as parents who just follow their child around everywhere, go down with them on the slide, or sort of terrified of their child doing anything on their own. Think about, you know, if you live close by, what age your child can walk to school by themselves. One of the statistics in my story is how in the 1970s, something like 85% of third graders walked to school on their own. Now it's down to 4%. I mean, there's really no reason for that. Like, I live, you know, three blocks away. And part of this is social sanction. Like, if I let my third grader walk to school, then all the other parents will think I'm nuts. But there's a stream of children walking down the hill to the school in the morning before school time. There really is no reason why they can't walk to school on their own. So just try and think of ways to kind of, you know, to sort of switch that social pressure a little bit, so that kids are allowed to do a little bit on their own and that parents don't feel like they have to intervene at every moment.
All right, let's try to get one more call in. Tim joins us now from Eau Claire. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I was raised with a very wild childhood. I'm 29. I'm currently going to college, and none of the people who I go to school with can take care of themselves. Because of that, my kids are allowed to have fun. They're allowed to walk to the park, and I'm not tying into what the media has to say when they freak out about every little thing that happens. You know, child abduction, they don't happen at a higher rate. We just report on them at a higher rate.
All right. Well,
so I'm not worried about it.
And Tim giving his kids a little bit of what he had when he was younger. What do you think of that approach, Hannah?
I think that's great. I mean, I think it's nice to start keeping that in mind. Since I've written this article, I run into lots of moms, and I feel like I've gotten so many pictures actually from children saying, thank you, my mom let me in the backyard build my own fort. So I've got an inbox full of pictures of forts, you know, where the mom just sort of stayed in the kitchen and let the kids kind of be outside without sitting with them or checking on them every second, and they got to, you know, do the stuff that we used to do.
Do you see the U.S. moving in this direction now? Is it time?
I think there is a little bit of shakeup. It does give me hope. I live in Washington, D.C., and we just got our first awesome playground, you know, one that where kids of all ages sort of love to play, and things are pretty high, and there's a zip line, and it's in a private school, but they leave it open for the community on the weekends, and it apparently took a lot of effort to get that playground passed without parents really worrying about the safety. It's a wonderful place, and it's utterly packed on the weekends, and you can see that kids are starving for such a place that just looks like a big Adventureland. I mean, it's not an adventure playground like the one I wrote about, but it really does seem exciting for kids. So I think there is a sense in which, you know, we all talk about helicopter parenting and overprotecting and millennials being depressed. I mean, this is very much in the culture right now. So I feel like the more we talk about it, the more people will get the message and start to ease off just a little bit.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking about it today, Hannah. Appreciate your time.
Thanks.
That was Hannah Rosen, national correspondent for The Atlantic.